If you've ever watched a spaghetti western, you might be forgiven for thinking that America's Wild West was all white. I'm Safraz Manzor, and today on the BBC World Service, we find that this was far from the case in The Forgotten Black Cowboys. It's a cold spring morning in Texas, and I'm in the back of an old western-styled wagon with the Northeastern Trail Riders. There's more than 200 of them, men and women, some on horseback, and others, like me, in the back of the dozen mule-driven wagons that accompany the horses, many of which proudly fly the fluttering state flag of Texas. The riders are all African-American, and the 107-mile trek retraces the original trail rides that former slaves made in the time of the Old West.
This gives you an idea how the pioneers used to go cross-country.
So where are we heading?
We're headed for Crosby, Texas area, about 17, 18 miles from here.
How many people do you think are here?
Normally, this trail ride is, there's 240, 12 wagons, 240 riders.
There are trail rides almost every weekend in the southern states, where black cowboys get together to ride and reflect on the role their ancestors played in the Old West. It's about more than dressing up. The trail riders are trying to reclaim the history of black cowboys in the making of the American West, and to show that the real West was as much Django Unchained as it was John Wayne. Michael Searle is a retired professor of history at Atlanta State University, where he was known to his students as Cowboy Mike, because he liked to give lectures dressed in spurs, chaps, and a 10-gallon hat.
The scholars who have investigated the number of black cowboys have come to a fairly, I think, consensus that on the cattle drives, at least 25% of the men driving cattle up the historic trails were black.
I grew up in New Jersey, and here I am with a college degree, own my own business, 45 years old, and no one had ever shared with me that half the cowboys were African American. And we say that, but some cowboys say 80%.
I mean, do you think that it's an accident that more people don't know about this story?
No. As you see from Hollywood, and you look at the old westerns, and most people got their history from the movies, and you did not see African Americans, Hispanics in the movies. I mean, I'd say probably 9 out of 10 people in this country think cowboys were all white.
I'm with Jim Austin, who, together with his wife Gloria, set up the National Multicultural Western Heritage Museum in Fort Worth in Texas. In truth, the building is less of a museum and more of an educational facility devoted to reminding people about the racial diversity of the West. I asked local historian Wayne Ludwig to show me around.
What are these photographs that we're looking at here? They seem to be like they're sort of archive photographs from what, the early turn of the 20th century?
These are photographs from the late 1800s, early 1900s. These would have been post-Civil War. Some of these were on working ranches. Some of them look like they were just taken on the side of the trail, like these two gentlemen here.
So these two guys, like one's definitely African-American.
Right.
And what would these guys have been doing? What were they like?
Well, they're not wearing guns, you can tell. So, you know, the Hollywood image of the cowboy, they were all white guys riding around the countryside, you know, shooting at each other and whatnot. And that really didn't happen like it's portrayed. These were probably just two men traveling from one place to another, and they may have just encountered them and asked to take their photo.
My name is Willie Davis.
Whereabouts do you come from?
I came from Houghton, Louisiana, to Beaumont, Texas, to ride in the trail ride.
Are you a cowboy?
I've been a black cowboy, I'll say, roughly 69 years.
A lot of people who watch westerns and see the John Wayne films, they wouldn't know that actually the history of the cowboy was a much more multicultural history.
Yes, it was. We did a lot of traveling, a lot of penning cows and stuff. And then we did a lot of working on the farm in our cowboy days.
Denise Battle from Shreveport, Louisiana.
And I mean, you're wearing a, what would you describe that as? Is it like a cowgirl hat? Or?
It's a cowgirl hat.
And you got your big belt on and you got your boots on. I mean, do you feel like you are a cowgirl?
Yes, I do. I live the life of a cowgirl.
And I mean, one of the interesting things is that this is kind of paying tribute to the black cowboys of the past, isn't it? And is that important to you?
Yes. Yes, because a lot of people don't understand why we do it.
As we've been going along in this wagon, we've been seeing people in cars alongside us or people on the side, and they've been sort of filming it on a mobile phone. A lot of white people. What do you reckon they're thinking?
I think they wait on this every year to see the blacks come out and participate in it. Because every year we get them running out to, you know, wave and take pictures and ride along beside of us. So they're excited, I guess, because in the Westerns you see white cowboys all the time.
It's a lovely kind of atmosphere, isn't it, with everybody around. And I've seen, you know, you've been riding just behind us and there's been a lot of laughter and stuff. I mean, is there kind of that kind of team thing must be really nice.
Right, it's like a family. You know, everybody out here from different parts, we're all family. You know, it's, if you don't have, I have, you're welcome to it. And that's the way our ancestors did it. But, you know, it's just not documented and known.
When black cowboys were involved in driving cattle up a trail, and let's say there are a couple black cowboys and there are 10 white cowboys or maybe even a Mexican cowboy involved in that, there's a kind of interdependence. Cowboys depend upon each other because at times they're in dangerous situations where you really need the help of the cowboy next to you. And so some folks have used the term range equality, that on the range there was a lot of equality and there wasn't a lot of hostility. If that cowboy leaves that ranch and goes to another ranch, either on a permanent basis or on a temporary basis, he might find real hostility.
Playing the harmonica in the living room of his home just outside Liberty, Texas, is Cleveland Walters Sr. He's 88 years old and looks like Morgan Freeman's older brother, and he's wearing a red bandana around his neck.
All the hard dirty work with a black cowboy.
Oh, Rocky Mountain.
We had to do it to get in there and cut those cows out. Now, what? How would you like one of them longhorn to be right on each side there, like that?
I'd rather not.
Could you take that?
Not if I could help it. So what was the best thing about being a cowboy?
Well, I don't know. I don't know how to answer it, because all of it was hard.
Everybody out in the world.
My name is Vincent Jacobs.
Now, Vincent, we are in Crosby, which is just outside Houston.
Right, about 35 miles east of Houston.
And we're in your home, and there are posters, and there's statues, and there's a thing about Vincent Jacobs Day. Why are they honoring you? What have you done?
Black cowboy. See, I grew up on a farming ranch, and I used to work with my dad $1 a day. That's what started me out rodeoing, because the first time I rode a bull and won some money, I won $16. And that was an 8-second ride. So when they paid me that $16, I never had $16 in my life.
So were black people doing separate rodeos from the whites?
When they first started, yes. Yes, when they first started, it was a separation there. And we had to work our way into it.
Do you think that most people know about black cowboys?
No. I'll tell you why. In 1972... we give the rodeo at Randall's Island in New York City. It was an all-black rodeo contest. And I've had people, they didn't know anything about us. They didn't know about no black cowboy. And I have had them to walk up and ask me, can I touch you? They didn't know it. They didn't know were we for real or not.
She's standing there.
Her horse waited on
her. Oh, yeah,
that's a good thing about training them.
Are we back on the move?
Yes, back on the move.
Oh, okay. I thought there was going to be some sort of a tooting of a horn to tell us that we were about to go.
No, they are moving.
Joe, get these, Lawrence. These is gloves.
I'm going to be riding with you now.
Okay.
In Texas, we're one of the largest collection of museums in the country, only second to Washington, D.C. In Fort Worth, you have the Texas Cowboy Hall of Fame. You also have the Cowboys of Color Museum that we're here, the Cowgirl Museum. And there's about four other museums that lie right here in Fort Worth. And you go up into the stockyards, they're still living the Western culture.
But in terms of the story of black cowboys, how important was Texas in that?
It's where it all started. You know, I mean, this is where, you know, when the slaves were set free, they came to Texas and they became cowboys. And they started, you know, running the cows, you know, to west. And in relevance to the black cowboy, this is where you should be.
The man here passing us now, the big mustache, and he's riding point. So he is the one leading the cattle ride.
It's mid-afternoon, and I'm at the Fort Worth Stockyards watching around two dozen longhorn cattle being led through the cobbled streets by cowboys on horseback. This happens twice a day, and with me to explain what's going on is the historian and collector Douglas Harmon.
The dominant one is usually the one in front. Sometimes they'd have a bell, and these are the outriders. In a real cattle drive, there'd be 2,000 head. Texas was the epicenter of cattle. But you had to get the cattle to St. Louis or to Chicago, and you had to do that, you had to probably go up to Abilene to a railhead. And so getting the cattle up there was the challenge.
One of the things I was just thinking, you look at all this stuff and you think about what the cowboy is, and it's such an American thing, isn't it? It's like an icon of being American. And I'm wondering whether one of the reasons why we don't often hear about black cowboys is because at that time, blacks weren't considered to be fully American.
Well, I don't know. American isn't maybe even not the right word. But clearly they were property in the U.S. Constitution. And they were treated as slaves in the really most of the states. But no, they were not full class citizens. So that's true.
Slaves were very active in the cattle industry. It's never been explored before.
Debbie Louth, PhD student at the University of North Texas.
The general perception is that a successful slave owner had 20 slaves or more and had large crops of cotton and large acreage. And what I have found is that a lot of the cattle owners had five or less slaves to help them with their operations, and they were as successful, or if not more successful, because of the help they had through their slaves.
That's a touching area with me, how people were sold as animals. Our black people were sold as animals. And that was my great-grandmother's slave paper.
Molly Stevenson is in the living room of the ranch that her family has owned for more than 100 years. She's turned it into a museum filled with old family photographs, artifacts, and documents.
The ranch, Taylor Stevenson Ranch, is one of the oldest African-American ranches, not just in Texas, but the nation. And you have this black family that has fought to keep the land, live on it, maintain it, and other generations are beginning to come back or be connected. That is very rare. We are not the largest African-American ranch. There are others that are much larger than this, but few where the families remain.
And how far can you trace back your family?
Oh, it's over a century to my, I'd like to always remember the great-grandparents, Anne and E.R. Taylor.
And you've got photographs of them up here on the wall, haven't you?
And E.R. Taylor was my great-granddad. His father purchased a slave by the name of Anne.
So he was white?
Oh, yeah. Because he was ill, he had tuberculosis.
So that's your great-grandfather?
Correct.
And then that's your great-grandmother next to him?
Anne Taylor.
So she was a slave that he bought?
His daddy, his father, bought her for him. And this is a copy of the slave paper. It basically says, Negro woman, about 21 years of age, purchased as a servant, nurse, and cook for life. And Texas is the only state that says for life. They lived as husband and wife. It was illegal for interracial marriages. But they did live as husband and wife and had six children. So that generation returned and down to where we are now, with seven generations.
That's the sound of Molly's husband, Elicious.
That's how we call our cattle, if they're in the back passes, to call them up, to call them to us. the truth was not told, and we were deleted from history. We like to remember the cowboys, both past and present, such as Myrtis Dykman, Lloyd Randall. We have the largest rodeo in the world in town now, the Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo. Myrtis and Lloyd rode during the days of segregation, where the black cowboys either rode last. They were always given poor scores, very poor scores, where they couldn't win.
Does it sadden you, or does it surprise you, or does it make you angry that that story is so largely not known?
I'm disgusted in some ways that it is, but again, that's the premises of the American Cowboy Museum, is to let others know that we were here then, we are here now, and we will continue to be.
Okay, if you want to listen to me, listen to Denise. Denise, tell Mr. Willie what you see.
Two sheep.
That's a baby goat. That is
not a sheep. Sheep have wool.
How did people find out about cowboys? They found out through the early books. If you look back into that literature, the black cowboys were not glorified the way that the white cowboys were. Well, it's just racism, I think.
Do you think that something in the story of the West was threatened by the truth?
I think it's more complicated than that. You could say there was a truth, quote-unquote, that was created through movies that only showed white cowboys.
Shoot them!
They're too far and they're moving too fast.
When I grew up and I went to the movies and I saw cowboys on the screen, I never saw any black cowboys. I saw Roy Rogers and Gene Autry and Lash LaRue, etc., but no black cowboys. And so, you know, the idea that you never saw any blacks in the West, you never saw any black men as cowboys, then they must not exist.
Yet in the 1930s, before Westerns became really popular, there was a time when a black cowboy did take center stage, at least in cinemas showing movies to African-American audiences. This was a time of segregated cinemas, and one man decided that he wanted to make a difference. Herb Jeffries, a jazz singer who'd played with Duke Ellington, set about becoming the first black Western screen hero. And he wasn't going to let the fact that he wasn't actually black, in fact he was Irish-Italian, stop him.
Herb Jeffries was just an amazing man. He was touring in the South, and he couldn't believe how many African Americans were lining up to see white Westerns.
Author and filmmaker Alan Governor.
Herb Jeffries decided that he was African American by choice, and he was a singer. I mean, he started with Earl Hines. He was encouraged by Louis Armstrong. He got the idea that he wanted to make a Western where the role model, instead of being white for being a cowboy, could be black.
I'm happy cowboy.
Despite being white, Jeffries embraced a black identity, and with films like Harlem on the Prairie, Harlem Rides the Range, and The Bronze Buckaroo, Herb Jeffries became known as the first screen black cowboy.
Well, what kind of trouble do you suppose he's in?
I don't know, but it must be something pretty bad. Because Joe's not the kind to holler for help unless he really needed it.
That's right.
With my rope and my saddle.
Herb Jeffries is still with us today. He lives with his sixth wife, Savannah, in a modest home in Wichita, Kansas, which is where I met him. He's very frail now and approaching his 100th birthday.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Very well, very well. Great to see you.
You feeling good? We're going to get you some hot coffee to go on. Gotta have that.
Good. It's a lovely morning.
Yeah.
So we were listening to you singing just before. You had a beautiful singing voice.
Okay, really?
Yeah.
With my rope and my saddle and my horse and my gun, I'm a happy cowboy.
Herb Jeffries, of course, was a matinee singer. He was a very, very good singer. I've heard him on movies. I've seen him sing. He's really very talented. He tells the story of being somewhere in the North. He and some other fellows were standing around, and they were outside, and they saw these little kids playing cowboys and Indians. And one of the little black kids was crying. And he says, he asked him, why are you crying? And he says, oh, I want to be a cowboy. But my friends, again, said there weren't any black cowboys. They won't let me be a cowboy. He said that was a motivation for him to later on go into the movies and to make movies, all the all-black cowboy movies that were made in the latter part of the 1930s.
In this clip from Kim Clements' 2008 documentary, A Colored Life, Herb Jeffries explained how he used makeup to darken himself and get into the movies.
Hey, forget about what my ethnicity is and how many different bloods I may have to me. I'm going to play a part, darken me up. And that's how I was able to do the picture.
Presumably, Herb Jeffries could have chosen a road less challenging by launching a very public film career as a white man. But he continued on as a black man at one of the worst times in American civil rights history.
Well, it's my decision of what I felt I wanted to represent at the time. And I felt I wanted to represent the man who was the lowest on the totem pole at that time.
And he's perfect. And the films, those that survive anyway, attest to the wisdom of his decision.
Do you remember the name of that makeup they put on your face and your skin? Was it Max Factor 24?
Herb's wife Savannah, who's 46 years his junior.
No colored kids, whether Indian, Mexican, India, Indians, Chinese, nobody had anybody to represent them. So Herb says, you know what, this is what I'll do. I'm going to make it my quest for sure to get this movie out. So all these tin roof theaters would play colored hero, non-subservient movie.
I've talked to folks who said they saw Herb Jeffries movies like in almost like in the backyard on sheets in various black venues where black movies were shown. But Herb Jeffries made up, and these were all black characters. There were no white characters in it at all black people in the film and that kind of thing. But they're entertaining, and they look a lot like the old cowboy movies. And there's a portion generally where they'll start singing. Of course, Herb Jeffries was already a very accomplished singer, and they'd be in the bunkhouse singing a song and things like that. They looked very much like the movies you saw on the silver screen of the day, except they were all black characters.
Our happy cowboys were is for.
Let's have a drink on that, eh?
So when you were a kid and you were watching, say, films and things, there weren't many black cowboys out there on the films, were there?
No. When I was coming up, there wasn't no television. You know, it wasn't no television really to look at nobody. Even at the time when they had television, I didn't see no black cowboys. I might have seen a black guy working on the ranch. This old black man that working these slaver houses like that, but he was just a porter. He wasn't no cowboy. But when I seen black cowboys, that's when they started having television. I was reeled in myself, you see.
I will tell you this, and this is just my opinion. I think one of the reasons there's not a lot of photographs and archival items is because they were black.
Teresa Burleson, director of the Stockyards Museum in Fort Worth.
We have thousands of pictures of the employees of the Swift and Armour packing plants back in the early 1900s. I have one of black employees because they were ignored. And if we choose to tell the truth and tell how it really happened, then we're educating the generations that come up behind us, and they need to know what really happened.
What brought you to this museum?
I'd actually never been here before. I've heard a lot about it and figured I should probably come.
And as somebody who's black, do you see enough representation? Do you think that that's a story that's not being told? What's your...
It's not being told at all. I mean, see here, there's a small section.
So the fact that the story of the West is also the story of, you know, black people and American Native Americans, I mean, how important is that? I mean, do you think that changes how you feel about who you are and about America?
It definitely changes a lot about how I feel, just knowing now I know where the history, how far it goes back, and then I can give that to my children and research it and learn more about it. Yeah, it just means a lot. Maybe I'll become a cowgirl, or my son will become a cowboy when I have kids. So yeah, definitely it's going to change a lot just knowing.
Do you think things have changed?
Things have changed to an extent, but sometimes you have to hold your head up and not down and speak in order to let somebody recognize you and respect you and move on. An old cowpoke ran riding along one dark and windy day. Riding left the devil heard he rode all the way. And if you want to ride forever, riding in the sky, ride alone, black cowboy ride. Yippee-yay-o, yippee-yay, ride alone, black cowboy ride.
I'm Safraz Manzil, and today's program, The Forgotten Black Cowboys, was produced by Mark Rickards.